From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. We'll check the weather forecast with Mike Tenor from T-Storm in Chicago and hear about the end of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour through Iowa and Minnesota with Jeff Wilson and Brian Grady. So stay with us for this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Corn futures finished lower for the day. September down a half at 324 and a half. December harvest month at 339 and a quarter, a half a cent lower. The March down a half at 352 and a quarter. May corn 360 and a quarter, a half lower. And July at 366, down a half cent as well. September beans were 9 and a half lower at the end of the day at 903. November new crop at 905 and a quarter, down 8 and 3 quarters for the harvest month. In January at 911 and three quarters, 8 and a quarter lower. March soybeans 913 and three quarters, down 8. The bean oil 37 cents lower. The bean meal down $1.90. Wheat futures July soft red up 5 and a quarter at 541 and a half on the settlement price. The hard red July at 478 and a quarter, 3 and a half cents higher for the afternoon. Live cattle futures October contract at $109.77 and a half. They finished a buck and a nickel lower. Feeder cattle were down 17 and a half cents in the September at 145.82 and a half, and lean hogs for 100 pounds in the October at $55.17 and a half, up $2.62 and a half cents for the afternoon. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at the commodity markets. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us. What do you see on the technical side of the marketplace for the day?
Well, for the most part, we talked a little bit last week about corn being in good position anyway to maybe trace out the month of August with a monthly reversal to the upside, since we did take out that late July low early in the month. And basically, since we made that early August low, we've had a nice little rally off of that low. And of course, yesterday or Monday this week, we had a nice up day. So, you know, we've got a nice monthly reversal to the upside in the making for corn. Now we still have time to, you know, tear it up between now and the end of August, but it kind of looks like it's in pretty solid footing to extend it south into September. Now, September is going to get tricky because September is one of those months that about 90%, maybe not quite 90%, but it's a very high percentage month that corn closes lower for the month of September. And basically what that is the early start of harvest and the anticipation of harvest pressure and whatnot usually then presses corn prices down into a first half October low. Sometimes that holds as a seasonal low, and then we pull out of that and we begin a seasonal climb as we go on in the spring. But corn often then has another test of that low, usually during the December delivery period. Sometimes it makes a lower low, other times it kind of makes kind of like a double bottom. But with corn here appearing that it's going to close out the month of August with a monthly reversal, really makes the month of September a critical month of whether or not we will go counter seasonal, or the downward seasonal pressures of September usually take hold and then press us lower into the end of the month.
So farmers who have old crop are under the gun at this point to go ahead and make a decision.
Well, they're going to be under the gun because I've been away from the elevator business so long I forget. But I think September 1st, I think you have to renew for another year.
The in charges are coming.
Yeah, the in charges are coming. And then you're going to get ready for another carry roll. So you're going to go backwards more. And some of these basis contracts that started out under the December contract are already 50 under. So if you start with another in-storage charge and then you roll it to December, You know, you'd be 75, 80 under the spot month. So there's nothing. It's going to be a very difficult decision, and people have heard me many times say the bad position always gets worse. It never gets better. And I think I've been saying that since March, really. And I do know people that will do it, and hopefully maybe this thing will catch. But, you know, I just don't think the crop is short enough to get a major sustainable rally. And I've always been in the opinion with my cyclical work that we had a shot at a late summer, early fall high. And that is still my belief. And that high should be sold, or at least one should get enough coverage on. Downside protection, enough cash sales, and this kind of stuff on that you don't get in a box where you have to make an unwise decision. So I do think this is a rally that needs to be sold, needs to be managed with downside price protection, whatever your choice is. You know, we do have a big crop coming. It's debatable, I suppose, about how big it is, but we got until January to decide, and we'll kind of go from there. Now, when you go over into the soybean complex, actually, soybeans are, you know, knocking on the door of maybe the yearly highs. I mean, we did take out the spring highs, so we're the highest we've been for a while on beans. When you look at the cash market, let me see what the daily chart looks like here. You could go back to early January, and I think we had some cash highs somewhere up around 940. We're at $9 or so Central Illinois cash, and that is above the highs that we had back in February and March before the coronavirus thing kind of took hold and really made things bearish as we went on into March. So soybeans have been in a nice, steady trend higher. This past several days, we've really seen an acceleration of that. I'm also in the opinion that soybeans are in a position to, you know, make a late summer, early fall high. And basically what I'm looking at is basically September 15th, give or take 30 days. So we are in that window now as we move past that August 15th time window. So when you go 30 days, so you kind of go from mid-August to maybe mid-October for a high. I know you can drive a semi-truck through that. But again, I'm in the opinion that this rally probably needs to be managed or sold or however you want to do it. Kind of get yourself so you don't get trapped into making some bad decisions. When you look at it on a monthly chart, now I'm looking at cash prices. We're basically looking at, when I look at a monthly chart, we've got an outside month going. And the next target here is to go back and kind of take out that January, late December high point up there around that 440 or 940 area. We've hit that $9 area. So soybeans have a tendency to move in 50-cent moves. So if we can decisively clear this 950 cash hurdle basis Central Illinois cash soybean prices, then the door opens up for us to take a good run at that 950 area.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Very well, Todd.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Jeff Wilson now joins us. He's been traveling along the western route of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Are you mostly in Minnesota today, or are you doing parts of Iowa too?
No, we're done with Iowa, at least on the western side. The eastern tour is doing the two-thirds of the eastern part of Iowa. So we took out, we had our 10 routes that left this morning from Spencer, Iowa, and we're going to meet up with the Eastern Tour in Rochester, Minnesota later this afternoon and this evening and have our meeting with them in the virtual meeting. So the story that I thought was interesting was that when we got into Minnesota, as we were getting closer and closer to the state line, things started to improve a little bit from how dry they were in that western two-third or western third of Iowa that we saw yesterday. The grass started greening up in the medians, the lawns looked a little greener, and the first three stops that we had were over 200 bushels an acre in Jackson County. So we were coming up Highway 71 and things definitely improved. But then ironically, the next two stops that we took in Cottonwood were 131 and 114, so variable. And then we ended up with a couple more that were in the 190, 170 area. So in Watonawa. So anyway, we've covered a couple of counties, and the corn and beans are kind of variable, and but generally good, and seems to be more soil moisture for sure than we saw down in Iowa yesterday.
And what did you come up with in the western part of Iowa? Because that would have been your tally last night, and I know Iowa will be tallied in general this evening.
Right, we'll have the total state numbers and get the other six districts. But our numbers were evidence of some drought problems. You know, today's drought monitor definitely showed the change in conditions. It jumped from 34% to 46% moderate to extreme drought in the entire state. And if you go look at those maps, that the place where it's the worst or the bullseye is exactly on the districts 1 and 4, which is where we saw the most drought stress in yesterday's tour. So in Iowa 1, we came up with an average yield of 181.3 bushels per acre, and that's down 2% from a year ago and 1.2% below a year ago. In District 4, the center west, was 172.4, which was down 10.4% from last year and 7.4% below a year ago. And then in District 7, which is the furthest south of the western districts, 184.7 bushels per acre, down 4.2% from last year, but up 0.4% from the three-year average. And the story is we saw fewer ears or the corn population in the districts 4 and 7. It was actually higher in district 1, so the furthest north ended up with a better ear population than we've had the last year was up about 5.3%. But the story is all three of the grain lengths that we measured in those districts were down from a year ago and the three-year average. So that's showing you that the drought stress was real. You know, sometimes when you're out or you're not in that area, but you're looking at the maps and you go, well, how much damage could there be? This is really good soil. Well, that grain length tells you that the crop was definitely hurt by the dryness over the course of the last 5 weeks when we've had less than 50% moisture in that area.
So Jeff was traveling through the western part of the state, and they finished up with that, of course, and it was the drought area. Brian, however, has been in the eastern part of the state, Grady, that is, throughout the day today, I believe, and probably traveled through some of the windswept areas. I can't imagine that wasn't the case. And hey, Brian, thanks for joining us, too. What'd you see today?
Well, we definitely got into the wind-damaged areas there, Todd. We came and then headed north, and we were in that Highway 30 corridor that really got damaged for our first four or five samples. So definite impact on yield, just really kind of devastating. They had a really good crop through that area. Most of the guys did, and to see the damage is disheartening. But it's, you know, those fields are a mess, and they got a lot of struggles ahead of them as they move into harvest. And you know, the worst case scenario for that would be is if they get wet, and the stock quality goes down, and you put more ears on the ground, and those types of things. So They still have some challenges in front of them, unfortunately.
How do you deal with the down corn as you decide what yield looks like on a 200 or 220 or 240 bushel corn crop that is just laid over?
So what we do is we do the sampling procedure the same as we would if the field was fully standing. And that's always the case. You always run into some corn at some point in time along crop tour that has some kind of wind damage almost every year. The difference is this year it's laying flat and it's really twisted in some of those areas. So you still have to find the rows. And then everything that's 12 inches or above on the ears off the ground, we're counting. If it's below 12 inches, the crop insurance guys told us that that's unharvestable at that point in time. The deal is that these pulses fields aren't laying completely flat. Some are, but not all of them. So there is harvestable grain out there. So we do our calculations, and you're not counting every year. If it's snapped, you don't count it. If it's laying down, it's less than 12 inches off the ground, the ear, we don't count those. And so the ear counts are going from something that would probably in a normal situation be somewhere to 90 to 120 ears in 230 foot a row, and down pretty significantly from that in some of those cases.
So it had an big impact on your stops, I take it, in some areas.
Some areas it did, and it takes quite a while. Normally it doesn't take us a whole lot of time to get into the field, do our paces, lay out the plot, pull our samples, and get back out. It's way more of a challenge this year. So it's not only slows it down, it's just, it's an arduous process that just takes some time.
And what did yields look like on your route for the day?
Well, they were extremely variable. They were down fairly significantly from what they would have been, obviously, without the wind damage. My route had a 168.8 average, and that includes the areas north of the wind damage. So, we had a low of 103 and a high of 232, almost 233. So quite a bit of variance out there between the areas that were hit and the areas that weren't hit by the windstorm.
Last night you released from Pro Farmer the statewide average, or the tour average, for the state of Illinois. What was it?
That came in at about 189.5 and up 10.7% from what we found in the state a year ago on crop tour. I was a little bit surprised by the Illinois corn crop in the fact that I never go in with any yield expectations, to be honest with you. That isn't how crop tour works. We go in with an open slate, but I was surprised by the variability that we found in the Illinois corn crop. I thought it would be a little bit more steady. Let's be honest, USDA put a 207 on it, second highest yield ever as of August 1. For the state, so you anticipate, the big yielding years in Illinois or any state usually have some pretty decent consistency, and that wasn't the case in Illinois this year from what we saw. There's a lot of good corn out there. There's a lot of great corn. There's average corn, and there's subpar corn as well, and I question whether we can get to as big of a yield that as USDA put on it on August 1 with that much variability and variance in the yields out there.
And tomorrow you'll have your national estimate, which is different than the tour yields as well.
That's correct. So tour yields Monday through Thursday here. That's just simply into the field, grab the sample, do the calculations, put it into our spreadsheets, and it kicks out a corn yield number. And it kicks out soybean pods in a 3x3 square. The Pro Farmer numbers take into account the crop tour data, and then we take into account other factors. So, like, let's take the wind damage areas, for example. We are doing a calculation off of that, but we have to take into account the analysis of it. What Pro Farmer does with our number is how much of that do we think that they will actually be able to harvest? How much more loss do we anticipate? Those types of things. Adjustments to harvested acres, adjustments to yield, areas outside of those that we sample in the seven crop tour states, so on and so forth. So there's many, many variables. And that's why the numbers that we see, and I'll use the 189.4 out of Illinois corn yield that we had yesterday, will all, you know, very likely be different when we publish the Pro Farmer estimate for the state of Illinois.
Brian Grady has been leading the eastern leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. He and Jeff Wilson have been out all week. They'll finish up tonight, and then tomorrow they'll tally everything up. And we'll talk with Brian again about the national yields that Pro Farmer will develop from the Crop Tour yields. Let's check in now with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net, and we'll be here to discuss today's cash grain situation. Good afternoon to you, Matt. I know you've been following the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour with interest. What are your takeaways so far?
Well, it looks to me like, other than South Dakota, most of these states are coming in a little bit lower maybe than what people projected or thought as far as the corn is concerned. But the pod counts on the soybeans is understandably awfully robust, and I think it suggests that we have the makings of a huge soybean crop and probably have enough moisture in some parts of the country to have it, but to finish it off and I think end up with a 53.3 plus yield in September, I think we're going to have some rain. So very interesting tour so far, but I'm going to be most interested in what they find out of Iowa as a whole.
Yeah, so we'll get that number this evening along with the number from Minnesota. That'll wrap things up, and then Brian Grady will join us tomorrow here on the Closing Market Report to discuss the massaged numbers that they'll use from Pro Farmer as their national yield estimates. Those are different than the tour numbers, so we'll talk to him then. What are you telling producers about this week as it relates to the cash grain situation and the markets, which have until today not done a lot except for that bigger rally on Monday?
You know, the basis on the river just continues to be pretty interesting. And so anybody who's even close to the river on corn or beans, you know, especially beans, though, old beans, they're actually going to kind of get rewarded here. Now, granted, we're down a little bit today. I understand that. But the rally that we've had whenever you combine basis and futures has been nothing short of astounding, especially as far as soybeans are concerned. So I think this rally has been a really nice gift for us. Old crop sales probably ought to get cleaned up. But as far as new crop, we've just been telling producers, you feel really good about production, then we ought to be getting a fair amount of beans sold for this fall. As far as corn's concerned, again, we're so far below that insurance price that it's a little more complicated. But for those that feel really good about production, you know, we've seen a few sales made, but definitely nothing near what we've seen as far as soybeans are concerned, relatively speaking.
Anything else you're watching or thinking about that we should discuss for the day?
Well, you know, I think this U.S.-Chinese thing that supposedly they're going to meet, I don't know if it's just a bunch of, you know, rhetoric, but bottom line is we had 11 straight days of sales to China. And that's very interesting. It's something to continue to watch, and I think it could support this bean market, even if we end up with a bigger yield than what they projected in August, just simply by getting those that export business.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net, joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenura is here now. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago to discuss the forecast across the Corn Belt. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. The Crop Scouts are having just beautiful weather on the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Will they finish up the rest of this week that way? And then I want to talk about the dry conditions that they have been discussing on Twitter all week, too.
Yeah, that sounds great. They're not going to see any real rainfall over the rest of their trip, so pretty much it'll stay sunny with just a few showers here and there over the next couple of days. And that's going to continue all the way into the middle and maybe even the end of next week. So the concern that we have going forward is that we do have some dry areas in the Corn Belt, and they're going to stay dry for at least another week. And that brings us into an interesting topic, because if we look at this growing season as a whole, we've generally been seeing wet conditions and then dry conditions, and then it turns wet again. And that's been alternating throughout the entire growing season. But now we're at a point where we need rain, but the rain isn't showing up. So all of a sudden, August is starting to look a lot drier than normal across the Corn Belt.
Yeah, so this is about grain fill, at least for corn at the moment, and for soybeans. They're going to need rain at the end of the month of August and the early parts of September. From the west to the east, I think the west has been the driest area. Clearly, parts of Iowa have been really dry. Who's in the biggest hurt at this time?
Well, it's certainly the state of Iowa. Iowa is in an agricultural drought, no matter how you want to look at it, especially within the central and western parts of the state. But over the last 30 days, the coverage of dryness has expanded, and it now includes parts of Minnesota, much of Wisconsin, and the northern third half of Illinois. And so this is the area of immediate concern because they need rains sooner than later. Most other areas were seasonable to wet over the last 30 days, and that was again because of rains that we saw back over the second half of July. But the story going forward is that there's just not a lot of rain on the way. Yes, we will see scattered showers and some thunderstorms around over the weekend and even early next week in parts of the eastern Corn Belt. But after that, there's not a whole lot on the immediate horizon, which takes us all the way into late next week and next weekend. Now, at that point in time, we think the jet stream is going to strengthen a little bit, and that's primarily a function of the sharper north-to-south temperature gradient that develops across North America in late August and in September. And that's just because the Arctic starts to turn colder at this time of the year, so you get a much sharper gradient across the continent. And that's a recipe to bring in some storm systems. So it will be a little bit wetter in 1 to 2 weeks than what we're going to see over the next week. But the thing is that, especially for soybeans, they need rain sooner than later. If they got a big rain today, that would be fantastic. If they got a big rain in a week from now, that would certainly be helpful. If you get a big rain in 2 weeks from now, now you're into September, and you have to start questioning if it will really receive full benefit from that rain event. And that's basically the story that we're looking at now. Rain chances start to increase in about a week, but they don't start to increase a lot until we get about 10 to 14 days out. And that's right at the time where the benefit of rain starts to diminish.
Yeah, my understanding is that in between that time, the crops across the Corn Belt will be subjected again to temperatures in the 90s. Is that right?
Well, certainly in the western growing areas of the plains and parts of the Dakotas, maybe even western areas of Iowa and Minnesota. As you move to the east, there will be some hot days like that. But maximum temperatures in general for most corn and soybeans will range from about 85 to 92 degrees. So that's not crazy hot for this time of the year, but it is several degrees warmer than normal. And if you pay attention to corn and soybean yield histories, they generally perform the best when it's wet in August, and especially when it's cool. So we're not going to be cool by any means. We'll just be a little bit warmer than normal. And that's just going to be pushing the crop a little bit harder than it likes, and maybe only a small amount each day, but a small amount each day gradually adds up.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Let's chat next week.
We will indeed. That is Mike Tenuri. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The address there is willag.org. Right now, though, I'd like you to visit a different address. Go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look for the webinars link there up at the top in the menu, and you'll be able to sign up for the webinars that the FarmDoc team is putting on right now. In fact, we'll have another one tomorrow and then again on Tuesday of next week. Eventually, we'll take up the price of farmland. You don't want to miss it. It's free at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Sign up today.